everyone, and welcome to the stand-up.
I have to step away for a second. Shut up.
Oh, my God, dude. It doesn't have to be exact. Every
classic
time.
Prime okay. moment, dude.
Yep.
Hey, hi. Hey, everybody. There is a very high chance I have no idea what we're talking about.
There's 100% chance I have no idea what we're talking
Google
about.
The Google Cloud Service outage last week.
Okay, so you do
which
know
Which isn't really
about.
A security thing, but that's okay.
Didn't you? Wait. You made a video on this. What are you talking
I did.
About?
And that doesn't mean
it's
anything.
It's not security.
I made a video on Nintendo Switch.
What?
Yeah, it's not security. What's the security problem?
I don't know what we're talking about.
No
also,
one got hacked.
I did make a video on it. Just throwing that out there. Just, oh, yeah, I made a little quick video on it, but I have actually
I got
no
it.
Ghosting
I got it.
Idea
I'll carry us. It's all good. Let's do it. Let's go.
We got oh it. We got gosh. This. What? We got this, Prime. Nothing could possibly go wrong. We're good. It's great.
Okay.
Step away.
Right
no
back.
Problem. We got this.
Go pee pee or something.
Yeah.
Okay, the reason why I got to be right back is I got to put a little bit of milk in my cacao coffee. Because just a splash of milk with cacao is really delicious.
I would love a coffee right now, actually. Oh, I want coffee so bad.
Yeah. Anyways, sorry.
Prime, I know that you're itching right now to do your signature opening to the extent that it exists for the podcast.
I, the single greatest opener of all time
there
for the stand-up, would love to start the opening. Hey, today we have a very special episode of the stand-up. We replaced TJ with, in fact, a smarter version of TJ. Low-level learning's first appearance on the stand-up, security expert, probably Bellatro expert as well. As always, we have Casey Moratori and Trash Dev on here. Today, we're going to be talking about a very large security incident and low-level learning. We brought him on due to all of his expertise, his good looks, his deep knowledge of C and null pointers and everything, and he's going to walk us through what's kind of happened, and we're going to talk about maybe the state of security and who knows where this is going to go. So, low-level, why don't you kick us off on this one?
Let's do it, man. Yeah. So, I mean, it all goes back to 1972 when C, the programming language, was invented. And then 50 or so years later, we're still using it, which is kind of crazy. But, yeah, man, last week, Google kind of took the internet offline for 3 hours.
Oh, hold on. Time out. You started like 50 years ago and then went right up to last week. Like, what happened in between?
Not a ton, honestly. Okay. A ton. Like, a couple new C standards came out, and then now here we are. So that's
people
about
were,
where it
people
ends.
People were
born. Yeah, some people were born.
Okay.
But yeah, so Google took the internet out, man, and it's kind of crazy how they did it. It was like Thursday at like 1352, roughly, Eastern time in the U.S.
I have to convert that in my head. 1352, 152.
Yeah. 1.
Okay. Yeah, 1 p.m.
He's
Eastern
a military
time.
Boy, you just got to deal with it.
10 p.m. Pacific time. And,
although I guess you round it to 2 o'clock, I guess. It's 52, but yeah.
Internet went down for a little bit. And no one still to this day knows exactly what happened, but Google did put out a report that talks about what they did. The end result, or the end reason, was that Google published code that did not account for null pointers, and when a policy change went out that contained a null pointer in the policy change, it crashed the management plane of the Google Cloud, period, full stop. That's what happened. Absolutely nuts.
Classic.
Crazy stuff.
MPE.
Classic Google move. And the irony in all of this is that Google is a company that runs the OSS Fuzz project, which is open source software fuzzing. So literally what they have is a like data center full of machines that fuzz open source software to find memory corruption vulnerabilities in them, right? This is a project Google has been sponsoring for a very long time. So the palpable irony in Google releasing software internally to their own management plane that had a memory issue, and not like a heap overflow or a race condition, something a little harder to detect, something as simple that you could like lint with like a failing to check a null pointer, crashing the internet is just some of the craziest news I've seen in a very long time.
Can you rewind a little bit?
Yeah.
You said two things that I think probably need a bit of explaining. One,
mm-hmm.
maybe give like a quick overview of what a memory fuzzer is. And then two, you said that nobody knows what happened, but Google released a port. Are you saying that Google knows what has happened? They're just not telling people what has happened?
Brut down! What happened?
I don't know.
Did you push?
On a Friday?
Never!
How are we going to figure this out?
How are we going to figure this out?
Did I just hear prods down? Do you guys need the wheel?
New MemKit config.
That makes sense.
I'm gonna spend a couple hours refactoring.
Off the plugins.
Don't guess where your issues are. You can see exactly where they are happening with Sentry. Get all the context you need to debug any problem because code breaks, so fix it faster with Sentry.
Operationally, internal to Google, we do not know how that code got out, right? Like, was the code pushed through CI/CD and, like, it failed the test and they just said roll with it? Was the code vibe coded and no one really checked? Like, there's a lot of, like, weird if ands that could be happening with that code that caused it to get published in the state that it was. That's a little weird. That's what I mean by like, no one knows what happened. We know that there was a null pointer. We know that that was the reason why it crashed.
Yeah.
But how that code got released is still kind of, like, ambiguous. And then Casey and I were talking previously about, like, when CrowdStrike had their incident.
Right.
They released, like, a 50-page report that said, like, hey, here is exactly what happened. Here is why the code went out. You know, sorry, it won't happen again, yada, yada, yada. Google has not done that yet.
And amusingly, these two exploits were exploits is the wrong term. Sorry, these two they're just crashes. Like, nobody exploited anything, right?
Right.
But they're actually kind of similar. The CrowdStrike one and the Google one were both like, we have some config stuff that can happen. Essentially, like, there's some kind of like code that's being driven off of like some data that goes into the code that tells it like what it should do, right?
Mm-hmm.
And in the CrowdStrike case, that was the problem, is that, you know, the in production was the first time it got fed the correct data, like, to make the bad case happen. And the same was true of Google, apparently. It's like, basically, this code, it will only hit its null pointer case. I mean, trying to read between the lines of the thing that they published, because, again, they didn't show the code like CrowdStrike did, but it only gets to the null pointer case, apparently, if you pass it a certain configuration for the quota system. Like, this, it was in the, like, thing that's trying to check quotas or this sort of thing. So it's the same exact kind of pathologies. Like, there's a type of data that if you fed it to this thing, it doesn't do the right, like, checking of that data to make sure that it won't go into some bad code path, and off you go. And so they're kind of actually somewhat similar, at least from what Google actually said, which, again, they didn't include the code, so it's like, who knows? They didn't even say what language it was in, correct?
They didn't. They said null pointer, but that could be C, C++, whatever, right?
Or Go. Go has null pointers, I think, too,
sure.
Right?
Yeah. Yep.
Yes,
true.
They do.
So
famously.
Hold on, time out. Did we explain what a memory fuzzer is?
Yeah,
I can talk about that.
Okay.
So basically, a memory fuzzer,
it's
basically, picture it's like a unit test where you're trying to get as much code coverage as possible, but instead of like traversing down paths with like the same data shape, you're literally mutating the data to try to find edge cases in your code that are not accounted for in testing. So like, if I have an HTTP fuzzer, my initial corpus, my first seed is going to be HTTP, you know, like a GET request, right? And then what the fuzzer will do is it'll pick a random byte in that packet. It'll mutate it by like flipping a bit. It'll like make an integer, a negative integer. It'll do some mutation, and then it'll run that request on the service and see, hey, does that input generate new coverage? If it does, okay, that is a new piece we have to add to the corpus to future mutate to find new code paths. And you do that trying to enumerate the entire code base from a coverage perspective. And so what a memory fuzzer would have done if they had fuzzed this software, and again, like, this is the science behind getting coverage in fuzzing is like cutting edge technology right now. No one has it like figured out, but Google's very good at it. A fuzzer would have very quickly found like, oh, if this field is zero, it crashes the program, right? So it kind of implies that the software was not fuzzed, at least long at all. To Casey's point, this code had actually been public, or not public, it had been released since like May of this year, like May 29th, I think. And because they had never pushed a policy change that exercised this code path, it just never was seen to crash. So either they didn't test it, they didn't fuzz it, nothing really was done to like try to exercise this code until it got hit on June 12th. So.
And it sounded like, too, that the fuzzing would not have had to have been very complicated, because the way they made it sound anyway in the very terse description was that like the kind of thing that would crash this was just something with some missing fields. They used the phrase missing fields. So, you know, a basic fuzz tester would probably try a bunch of different field combinations with some missing. Okay, like, that's not a weird thing to have fuzzed.
Yeah.
And apparently that was not done, I guess. But again, because there's so little information, who knows? Maybe it was a very strange, like, really unusual combination of missing fields that no one thought to check. Who knows, right?
Yeah, I would imagine is that, again, all speculation. I don't work at Google. I have no idea.
Yep.
It is likely they're passing around either a JSON blob or a YAML file. And then, like, if you use some YAML object that exists, but a subfield in that YAML object does not exist, that will populate a null pointer that then gets read. And the problem with that is, like, fuzzing binary data is very easy because, like I said, you flip a bit, you make an integer sign, something like that. Fuzzing data with a sane grammar, like JavaScript, for example, or YAML, much more complicated. So the fact that it was not fuzzed implies that it was some like human readable grammar and like a config spec that just didn't get tested, which is, again, for Google, it's just crazy. But also, I could totally see why that would happen operationally.
So I have a question.
Glenn? Yeah, what's up?
So I don't know much about the outage because I was at a conference, so I didn't really see the internet go out, if it actually did at all. Mm-hmm. So when you say they crashed the internet, to me that just sounds like a really bold claim. Like, what? Like,
yeah.
When we say they crashed the internet, right? Like, what is like the impact here, and like, what was the collateral? Like, what happened exactly?
Yeah. So basically, when this outage happened, what really ended up occurring was that the binary that was responsible for doing quota and authority checks or like authorization checks on requests like crashed in all regions of the world, right? So basically any call to a Google Cloud Platform API would just 503. Like you could not do anything. So if you're like my course website, not a plug, this is like real life.
Yeah, what's the course website again? Just
Low Level Academy. If you want to learn C, Rust, whatever. Okay. Yeah, okay. Just
plugs are allowed here.
Low Level Academy.
Plugs are allowed.
No, but the reason why I'm saying this is because I depend on Google OAuth, right? And so every time my site receives a 503 from an API, I get an email. And so during this outage, because the OAuth provider was returning 503s, I got like 120 emails in 30 minutes being like, you know, the internet's down. So the issue was basically every site on the internet now depends on Google in some form or fashion through OAuth, through the actual like compute providers, a bunch of other stuff that I don't use or don't care to use. But basically, because Google in its entirety went down, it kind of like brought the internet down with it, which is very like counterintuitive to like the design of the internet. It's meant to be like a decentralized mesh of nodes that if one goes down, routing exists and you can kind of route around it. But if it kind of just goes to show that we have this really weird dependence on like single points of failure in modern cloud architecture, which is kind of scary, I think, from a cyber attack perspective, right? It's kind of like how when Dyn went down, or Dyn, however you want to pronounce it, in 2016, like, again, DNS, core protocol to the internet, there was, like, one major provider that went down because of a botnet, and when that went down, it took the whole internet down with it, so.
Cyberdyn, did you say?
No, just Dyn, D-Y-N.
Okay.
Yeah, sorry, cyber attack. The provider is called Dyn. I don't know if it's Dyn or Dyn.
It's a Terminator joke. He's going Skynet on us.
Sorry. I'm a little too young for Terminator, I think. I'm 30.
No way.
Yeah.
Shut up. You're not too young for Terminator.
Your whole parents are already dead.
Wait, when did the first Terminator come out?
Like 78, I think.
Oh, was it that old?
No, really? 81 or 2.
It was 80s.
Terminator 1? Nah, I don't think so. I think I
was
right.
In the late 70s? No, he wasn't.
Terminator 2 is the best Terminator.
Okay, 84. Though. You're right. It was
84. I was going to say, it's like
little.
Yeah. My bad.
A little older.
Yeah.
But the problem is, you can name any movie. I probably haven't seen it.
Okay. Do you just not like movies?
Lord of the Rings? Okay, those I've seen.
Oh, got him.
But I'm a nerd. Any other movie, fine.
Yeah.
Really, just any other movie?
What?
Star Wars. Do this again?
Star Wars.
Fine, Star Wars. Those are the only two. Other than that.
You guys are bad. 1,000. Yeah. Love it.
Anyways, I guess we could just move on, Mr. I've never seen any movies except for all the ones we named.
Yeah, exactly.
Of the two, yeah.
Before, maybe we should just stay off topic. I don't know, it's going to bring us back on, but this is kind of good. So name a third movie. Someone name a third movie.
I went with Gladiator.
I have not seen that.
Yeah, that's really? A little more
Saving
obscure.
Private Ryan.
No,
I've seen
first
half
off,
of
Gladiator
it.
Is not rare.
Whoa, stop.
Gladiator is one of the best movies ever.
Everyone really? Stop. How did you only see half of Saving Private
Can I tell
Ryan?
You why? Can I tell
yes,
you why?
Please.
When I was growing up, big paintball kid. We loved to play paintball. We would go drive an hour south to go play paintball called Cousins Paintball in Toms River, New Jersey. And every time we went, we would hype ourselves up by watching the Normandy invasion scene. We would get like an
that
hour into the movie
sick.
And then we would be done. Yeah, dude. That's what
that
we did.
That is dark.
Dude, I mean, that's what we would do. We were like 12-year-old kids, man. We had to get hyped up somehow. So.
And that's how I knew I would have a job in security someday.
What?
Dude, we were going to war with paintball, man. Oh, yeah, we were teenagers, so I mean, like, give me a break. But yeah, so that's why I've only seen half of it. Because we would get into the Normandy invasion scene, get like an hour into the movie, and then it'd be over. And I mean, we'd be there.
He's like, okay. I still don't know what happened in World War II. Who won?
Yeah, I mean, did we win? Shit, I have no idea.
It looked pretty bad from that. I didn't. We probably weren't gonna.
No spoilers, please.
Yeah, no spoilers. And apparently, like Oppenheimer, we had like a big bomb or something. That's crazy too.
When did that even happen? Who knows? I know. Confusing. Very confusing.
All right. Well, let's get back on topic here. Okay, so philosophically, are you saying that all those times I've been told that rolling my own auth is for losers and people who want security issues? May not have been correct. Is that true? Is that what you're saying? Low-level learning, chief expertise of security?
I mean, chief expertise in cloud, incorrect. No. But yeah, I don't – it's tough, right? It's just everything you do anywhere, including in programming, including in like system architecture, is a choice in risk. And what is risk? It's the probability that a thing will occur, and if it occurs, what happens, right? How bad is it? The probability that Google Cloud goes down all the time is fairly low, so not impossible, but like, you know, it could happen. So I don't think it's bad if you use Google off. There's nothing wrong with that, but you have to consider that in your calculus. Like, well, you know, how mission critical is my software? If Google goes down, which it definitely could, are people going to get hurt, kind of thing? Like, maybe medical providers shouldn't be using cloud auth for their stuff if it's, you know, a complete necessity that they get into it. So I don't think it's bad to roll your own auth. I just think you have to do the math on what makes sense for your application, you know?
It's kind of rough, too, I think, like, at least from a user's perspective, or, I mean, for when I say user, I mean someone who uses, like, cloud services. Mm-hmm. It's a bit tough, too, because one of the things that seemed to get exposed by this particular crash, at least when I was kind of looking at people's reports on it, was that a lot of people didn't seem to know or maybe could not have known that they were relying on someone who was relying on Google. So I could even imagine somebody who's like, oh, don't worry, we like use two different storage providers or two different auth providers, not realizing that actually they will both go down if Google's quota server goes down, right? And so one of the things that kind of occurred to me during this crash, not being a security professional, so I don't really have to think about this for my job, but it just was kind of floating around my head, was I was like, you know, it probably should be a requirement somewhere for these kinds of services that you get the diagram where it's like, what are all the things that you actually call out to? So that I can look, and if I want to do a redundant thing, I know that I need something where the Venn diagrams don't overlap. Because if at the end of the day, all of these people call AWS, then really I have no redundancy at all. Because as soon as AWS goes down, all of my stuff goes down or whatever. Yeah. Right? And I realize no one's probably thinking that way. Like people, like the web is not really about uptime, it doesn't seem. But like, let's suppose you were, it would be interesting to be able to get that so that you could just kind of know, okay, if I use this and this, they're fairly disparate. Whereas if I use this and this, they share a bunch of services, so there's probably no point because I'm not really getting any redundancy. Does that make sense what I'm saying?
Yeah, it makes sense. But I do want to throw something in here really quickly before an actual expert speaks, is that, Casey, it sounds like you're getting dangerously close to us drawing UML. Which, just generally speaking, here at the startup, we're very against UML. So that already sounds like, hey, we just need like a universal language for modeling all the services and their dependencies.
You want Grady Booch on here. You got to get some Booch. You got to Booch it up.
I don't want Booch on here.
Booch
talking
is coming
about
on. I'm going to call him up. I don't know him, but I'll, you know, call him up randomly.
You're gonna get him on?
Hey, Grady. What's going on, man? You don't know me, but I got this podcast that no one wants you on, apparently. Could you come on? Yeah, okay. Well, no, I'm not talking about a UML diagram, but I guess I am sort of scarily talking about maybe, like, what do they call this? A systems architect diagram, whatever the hell they call it. That little thing where they draw a bunch of little cloud shapes and then they write a name in it and then there's arrows. I mean, I don't actually need that because I just need the list, right? I just need to know, like, what main services, you know, are you depending on or something like that. But I do think that would be interesting to know just from an architecture standpoint, because it's like, if you're thinking of this service as just an endpoint you connect to, and so you're just thinking, what is the chances that that goes down? You may not realize that really that and some other thing, they will go down at the same time if this other third service they both depend on goes down. And that's like to the point Low Level was just saying about like calculating that risk. That's an important part of the risk calculation. Right. You have to know which things are independent, because like the chance that Amazon and Google have an outage on the same day is pretty low. But if actually they're secretly both using each other's stuff, it's very high. And you need to know the difference between those two things. That's all.
Yeah, okay. I mean, you saw that when, like, as a result of this, Google had an outage, but it also caused Cloudflare services
yes.
to go down.
Not I was just about to ask this. How did that happen? What was this? Because I guess I was a bit shocked when Cloudflare was reporting things going down afterwards, because I heard this was, like, a Google-related thing.
Yeah.
And so I was very confused as to how the other services went down.
They have this worker service thing they do, and it was it relied on Google Cloud, apparently.
Oh, were they actually related? Was the Cloudflare
yes,
outage?
I believe that was the case.
So that's the only outage I heard of was the Cloudflare one, so I didn't realize they were kind of like one in the same.
I think they are.
Which is really funny, because at the conference, we were at a Cloudflare booth, and we were like showing them the status, like, hey, you guys are down. And we just like walked away, dropped the
really?
Bomb on them.
At Render oh, ATL, man. You were literally walking up to people who were sweating bullets.
I think Hacksaw did it.
You're down.
You know,
hey,
like,
man,
your
entire service is down. Have a nice conference.
Sorry, I'm looking at the report.
You guys should pack up and go.
Cloudflare's report went a lot more in detail, too, than Google's did. So it looks like, yeah, Casey said workers, as well as, so what is it? Workers, Warp, Access Gateway, Images, Stream,
okay.
Workers AI, Turnstile, AutoRag, I don't know what that is, and Zaraz. So,
there's
like
a lot of their stuff.
Ton of services are downstream dependent on Google at what you would call, you know, a CSP, right? A cloud service provider, which is just, again, to Casey's point, like, you can't make a sane risk calculus if you don't know, like, the probability and the outcomes of things happening. So, like, if Google is, like, the core, call it center of gravity, right, of all of these things, if it goes away, what happens? You know, but because you're not exposed to that, you can't make a good call off of that.
I have a question for you, low level.
What's up?
So obviously,
you say your question, Trash.
I'm gonna say my question. All right, you ready? 3, 2, 1. Hold on. Articulate. Okay. So let's picture like a big company.
Yeah,
like Amazon or something.
Let's say that you were like Netflix. Let's say you just pick a random company. It's like Netflix.
Dude,
let's say.
I was thinking about this question for like 10 minutes, and it's just like okay. Let's just picture I'm like Mr. Amazon, and I have a lot big company. It's so many teams. It's hard for me to find like which team is actually dependent on something that could actually like the dependency waterfall, right? Like how do I. Like, if when you're consulting, or have you seen this in practice, like, how do companies approach this, like, to know that you're, like, the single domino, like, if you fall, we're all, like, fucked, right? Like,
yeah.
Because it seems like when things like this happen, it's clearly, like, not in anyone's, like, peripheral, right? I don't know.
Yeah. I'm going to say I don't have a good answer to this. I've worked at big places and I've worked at small places, and inevitably what happens at companies that get big is their knowledge management solutions begin to suck very bad, and people that in what you would call like principal engineering positions know less and less about like the actual principal engineering concepts of the architecture. And so at the end of the day, like nobody probably knows the totality of like what you depend on. And I'm not sure there is a good answer. I mean, I think the real answer is like, you have to have a single guy that probably knows the entire setup and have like a good place that everyone can go reference and see like kind of what Casey said, like the UML diagram of the architecture, right? Like, hey, we depend on Google here. If it goes down, we can make this risk calculus. But there really isn't a good answer to this. It's probably why this, not that it keeps happening, but like that this is able to happen because no one's really aware how it all kind of glues together. It's hard, especially at a company as big as Amazon or Netflix potentially.
Random company, just completely random.
Yeah. So like question for Prime. So obviously we have like Chaos Monkey. Is Chaos Monkey kind of like in the same spirit of? I don't really know what it does at a low level.
I'll tell you what Chaos Monkey, Chaos Kong, and Chaos Gorilla, or Chaos Gorilla, Chaos Kong. So we have three of them in Netflix.
I had no idea there was three of them. What?
Hey, Trash, let me tell you about Netflix since you work there and I don't. So so Chaos Monkey, what it would do is actually target an individual instance in Amazon, and it would kill that individual instance. And so that way it's kind of to prevent any sort of like stateful operations between two separate services where I'm caching, like I'm doing some sort of extracurricular caching and creating some sort of weird state dependency. It will start just randomly killing services, and that runs in production every single day, as far as I know, at Netflix. Chaos Kong or Chaos Gorilla will take down an entire service. That's why we have something called Blue Services at Netflix. So if you look into Blue Services, that's like how we do a lot of default responses and things like that. So if a service goes down, you're able to have some form of data coming up. That's why we have a default Lolomo, because if you can't reach GPS or map or you know, all the things that go into creating There's like Pitcher, there's Rex, there's all those services all together. If one of them goes down, then you get what is the default LoLoMo, which is like the latest known highest ranking videos that will all come down. So you'll get like Stranger Things right off the rip, even if you've seen it, and there's no new episode.
Just to translate this for Prime, using knowledge I gained from Prime Stream, they use the word LoLoMo to mean list of movies, I believe.
I didn't know that for the longest time.
Yes, we technically are a LoLoRoMo, which is a list of recommendation objects for movie objects.
Okay.
That's LoLoRoMo.
And it's a
new
one.
I can explain that for another one. I actually was the first person to implement that. Okay. It was very tricksy, but we got it done. With all that, then Chaos Kong, which is, you will see emails about that. So if you just search in your email Chaos Kong, it usually runs on a Wednesday. And what will end up happening is that we'll actually take down an entire region. So not just a specific service, we'll actually take down US East 1 or US East 2 or West 1 or somewhere in EU. And it will be ran in production. And usually it's for like 1 or 2 hours to make sure that if some region goes down, Netflix continues to operate correctly. So those are the three levels. And so this doesn't help, because the problem is that if every single one of these services has some sort of dependency, say, on Google, you can't take down a region to test this, because you don't take down a region, you're taking down an external service, which would crash every single subservice, which would take down all regions.
Right.
And so there is no overflow mechanic. So very interesting thing to do a Chaos Monkey with, which is to – kill that service for, or a Chaos Kong at least would be to kill that entire service for a moment and see how does your system handle, say, a Google going down or a something. But then you don't also know, like, all the like you said, like, one would know that Cloudflare was going to get taken down because Google did an access to a nil pointer.
I have an idea.
Yeah.
I have a great idea. You guys can have this for free at Netflix. I'm just giving this to you. I'm giving this one to you.
I think he's on the same page as me. I'm curious what this is.
Okay.
So I'm not on the same page. What's happening?
So here's what you do. Because obviously you do have a problem, because Netflix is like, the whole point of the service is I'm supposed to be able to play movies, supposed to be able to stream movies at home or wherever on my device is. And you get in this situation, Google Cloud goes down, Amazon goes down, whatever. Whoever's storing the data goes down, I can't get the movie. So here's what you do. You get a really, and I mean blocky, compressed version of Baby Shark. So we're packing this thing into like a megabyte, right?
Okay.
And every single server node you have, no matter what it's running, keeps that 1 megabyte in memory. So that if everything goes down, Netflix will just stream Baby Shark to everyone so that at least something is playing during an outage. And then you can just be like, you can make up something about what happened. You're like, oh, sorry, you know, like, our recommendation service was a little on the fritz, so it just decided that everyone wanted to watch Baby Shark, and then it will seem like you just have, like, infinite uptime. There you go.
Can I tell you a fun side story? This just reminded me of a side story.
Okay.
I tried to convince our marketing wing to do something kind of similar.
Oh, really?
In a similar vein. So, effectively, they did this once. So if you look back in the day, this must be 2016, 2015, we actually leaked, I think, the second season of House of Cards early.
Okay.
And everybody was like, oh my gosh, House of Cards. And then you got like, for 30 minutes, it was up and people could go watch it. So we actually like had content that we shouldn't have had leaked. And so then there's all these articles written, all this hype built and all this. And so I actually wanted to, I know this is not actually related at all to your idea. It just reminds me of it. Mm-hmm. I tried to convince Netflix to leak shows more regularly, just for like a half an hour, because then you get all these articles written and everyone gets super hyped up, and it's like such a sweet way to mess with people, and it looks like it's an accident. And so you can have this whole idea of like accidental content and just being like, oh, our fault, you know, didn't mean to do that one.
And then publish like a fake apology every time, right? It's like making up service names, like our Gorgonzola service failed and then they're just like, they don't actually exist internally.
Great. Love Sir, Galacticus. You know?
Sorry, low level, you wanted to say something that was not my ridiculous Baby Shark joke.
It sounded like you were going down the path that I was going to go down, but you didn't. It's okay.
You went down a completely different path, I think.
Yeah. I propose Chaos Schlong. Hear me out.
Okay.
This is actually real. Like, what you could do is you could create, like, basically a firewall red button layer in between a cloud service provider and, like, whatever service it is. So just like you're doing, like, Chaos Dong, what are they called? Chaos Kong? You know, Chaos Kong attacks
Chaos
at Netflix.
Dong.
You could also do... And then, like, if it's a regional cloud-based thing, it'd be Chaos Kong Dong or Chaos, you know, if it's just for, you know, a small little service, Chaos Monkey Dong. But all you're doing is you're red buttoning the cloud firewall to see, like, if Google goes away, what happens, right? My rate is roughly $1,200 an hour. That will be $120. You can bill it to Netflix Trash. I'll give you my info.
Obviously, the only problem with that notion is that there's all those third-party ones, like the Cloudflare one, that leaves your cloud or leaves your private network that you can control, your whatever, however you're controlling the traffic through your private network. You wouldn't be able to control that, and so they would still remain up, which would hide where the problems were actually at. And this is like the sole problem, which is the internet is supposed to be distributed. It's supposed to be the people-owned thing, but the reality is that the internet is largely power accumulated.
I think I lost you there. Can you explain why that wouldn't work again one more time? So you're saying...
Okay, so let's say I have three services. I have Google Login, and I have Cloudflare AutoRag, which I assume is something to do with AI. You would program in your little you know, your little cluster of machines that any request going out to Google automatically explodes.
It's not a cluster of machines. It's called Donkey Kong or something. I don't remember what he called it. It was like Dong Schlong or whatever.
Architecture that, Donkey Kong Schlong.
Yeah, right? that.
When that thing's on, it takes the cluster of machines and says, okay, any network traffic that matches this regex, which of course don't do that, but let's just pretend you do it this way, matches this regex, we just return an auto 500. Okay, that works on the Google sign-in. We fix the problem. But the Cloudflare request to AutoRag, you don't solve because that request to Google happens outside of your purview to like affect. That's where this big problem is that
you basically need a black hat team. You need a black hat team to go actually crash Google and see what happens for the day. And that's the only way to actually implement Donkey Kong Schlong or whatever it's called.
It's crazy. Lobo's been here for 20 minutes and Casey's saying Schlong and Dong. True. Yeah. I mean, couldn't you also catch this too if like, so I'm saying like basically any external dependency you guard with a red button that you can test, right? Because then like, then you could test, it's not so much like that you're depending on that to tell you when Google or Cloudflare or whatever goes down. It's more like you're able to test like, hey, from a risk calculus perspective, if Cloudflare. Oh, but you're saying you don't know the dependency, I guess.
That's the problem. It's the same problem I was talking about originally. Just like, if you don't, if this isn't disclosed, or worse yet, I guess if you combine the two problems that we've talked about, it gets even worse. Because, like, I'm saying, like, oh, it would be nice if they said what they depend on. But what you were saying, Lalevel, is that, like, it's unclear that anyone at the company may even know the answer to that question always. Sure. Like, dude forgot that, oh, we actually do call, like, the Google service in this one place, and we forgot about that, and we didn't put it on the diagram, and so then we went down because, you know, blah, blah, blah. So I guess it's, like, what I'm saying is just an observation of, like, this decreases your ability to analyze your risk, and there may be nothing you can do about it.
Yeah, I mean, really? I think I'm in that team. I think I'm literally in the team of like, that's just how it is. Yeah. Figure it out. Like, you
it's
know
like
what
either
I mean?
Roll your own everything or forget it. Like,
I mean, do companies do that? Do people just like, I just don't want any dependencies?
Actually, I'm so happy you said that. Trash. I'm so happy you said that because that's the next thing I wanted to talk about, which was my happiest part about this whole thing is knowing the level of tweets that were going to happen from DHH. Right after this thing started going down, I was so stoked. I'm like, here comes DHH. He's going to be coming in hard. He's going to be like, on-prem solutions.
Exactly. At what point do we just have it all under our own roof?
He was living the dream life. They're like, oh, it went down. Oh, I didn't know that.
Was he tweeting a lot? I didn't see.
Going down.
Was he going nuts?
Oh, yeah. He said there's even... I saw more tweets about people getting worried about DHH tweeting than DHH tweeting, but there were several of them.
That's awesome.
And this is like my favorite. That's my favorite aspect of the whole thing is that someone who has been right this whole time, who everyone makes fun of, and then the thing happens that he talks about, and he's just they're all like, oh, great. Here he's going to be insufferable now. It's just like, or he's just going to be right, and he told you so. Mwah. Okay,
Chef's
no one else
kiss.
Noticed? Whatever. I thought it was fantastic. We don't need to discuss that part.
I was living real life touching grass. I missed it all.
Okay, so I want to tell you. So something funny happened to me is that I was streaming during that day, and I got done my stream. I ended at like I think it was the hour that Cloudflare went down, and then I had a whole bunch of programming that I had to do. And I just proceeded the program until like 3 or 4 in the afternoon, open up Twitter, and everyone's just like, oh, I can't work. The life's ruining. The internet's down. I had no idea the internet even went down. I was just in my own little world with my headphones on, and I missed the entire like experience of the internet exploding.
Yeah, I literally had no idea either.
I lost out,
I don't actually know like what exactly went down like in my own like what do I use every day that went down.
Everything went down. Like I remember like people couldn't – on – our Discord people couldn't upload images.
Could Tesla start? Could you drive a Tesla?
I don't have a Tesla. Mm. I refuse to use a computer that is connected to an internet. I mean, to a car that is connected to the internet. I think that's absolutely ludicrous.
I was like, Casey, you're on a computer that's connected to the internet, buddy.
Casey, I used to have that mentality. I used to, like, refuse to do smart thermostats, smart cars, and then I just gave up. I was like, nah, whatever.
Don't do it.
If they're going to kill me, they're going to kill me. You know what I mean?
No, like, no, you know, I know what happened. Your wife bought that Wi-Fi lamp. You uploaded a picture of it, and after that, you're just like,
GG. My wife, love her to death. She's actually in the other room. She might walk in here while I'm making fun of her. She bought a lamp that was like IoT, and to turn on the lamp, you had to download an app that connected to the lamp over Bluetooth. Ah, hold on. And then you had to put your Wi-Fi password into the lamp for it to connect to the internet to upload its firmware, and then you could turn the lamp on.
Exactly.
Yeah, and then it bricked itself somehow, and it's useless and sitting in my bedroom still. It's crazy, man. So ever since then, oh, and also I had to punch a hole through my firewall for it to work. I had to make I had to make a separate VLAN on my network, and on that network I had to basically allow I block like traffic by country. I had to allow a different country into my network for that lamp to work, which is pretty
insane. What country
was it? Russia?
China.
China.
And allowed Chinese traffic in my network. Never heard of them. Yeah,
you allowed China in from a Wi-Fi lamp that uploads passwords. That definitely wasn't
worth it.
Needed the lamp, baby. Needed the lamp.
Did it at least change colors? Was it like a
Oh, yeah, it was cool as hell.
You can make
it
red.
It also had a timer in it that when you, like, oh, it's 6:30, sun rises at 6:45, it'll slowly bring the room up to light. It'll be like, and it makes, like, bird noises. It's, like, kind of a rad
lamp. I actually have a clock that, like, does that.
Yeah, but it broke, so it's, yeah, whatever.
I love how, like, no one can program without the internet. Like, nothing you just said requires the internet at all. But they're like, you know what? We need this lamp to connect to China.
Because remember, we need that. Off,
the only
that
way
the
we
best.
Get sunrise in America is a server in China.
China, that's right. Yes. That's
what it came off to me as, we need a convenient way to ask you for your Wi-Fi plain text password. But, like, you know, I'll let that be what it is. Yeah, man, it's crazy. Like, GPS exists. GPS has a time source. Just use that. I don't know why it needed Wi-Fi access.
Yeah, honestly, peak tech was the clap on, clap off lights.
Dude,
you walk
bring
in.
It back.
Yeah. Remember those commercials, everybody? Old people? No?
They're all getting out of bed. They're like, I go back to sleep. Like,
that was peak technology.
Yeah, dude, so good.
I will say the fact that we have to sign in to something to use it, it for me personally is single-handedly the most frustrating aspect of modern life.
Mm-hmm.
Like anything that I purchase that requires that, I want to throw it out the window. And I recently got an automated dog food feeder for my dog. And get this, I want you to just sit down and listen to this. There's no internet to it. There's no Bluetooth to it. It has a record button so you can just be like, hey, dog, it's time to eat.
Yep.
It records your voice up to 10 seconds, and you can have up to 4 feeding sessions a day.
That's pretty cool.
We have this.
You automated your life.
We have basic technology. It exists.
We have this as well. We have this for our cats. It says Bon Appetit, Tiny Puss every time it puts the little
Let's
stuff
go.
Yeah. What?
Yeah.
That's awesome.
It does.
Does it, like, in your voice? Or is it like a
song? Yeah, yeah, yeah. We recorded
nice.
That.
I
it's
love
like
that.
Bon Appetit, Tiny Puss.
That, that's the, what, is that how you say it? Say it again.
Bon Appetit, Tiny Puss. And then all the stuff, the food comes.
He's Mario all of a sudden. Tiny Puss.
Yes. And this the best part about this is you have to remember this is an automated feeder, and there's two of them because we have two cats, and there's one for each cat, and they these feeders go off, you know, 4 times a day or something. So if there's guests over, right, it's just like, oh, hey, how's it going? And then, like, in the background, it's like, Bon Appetit, Tiny Puss. It's like, it's just a cat feeder. Don't worry about it. Yeah.
That's awesome.
It's
That's
pretty
really
awesome.
Cool.
Dude, it's totally normal, bro. It's just a cat feeder, okay?
Don't worry
I've been
about
weird
it.
About it. But, okay, so this cloud thing, we got to get back to the cloud.
Like, just comes. We're like, okay, all right, we're just blowing past that.
Prime's like,
I've never heard anyone call a cat a tiny puss before. That's
oh, dude,
new to me.
I love
that
using
is
the word. I totally
you like
abuse.
Using the word
I abuse that so much all the time.
Ooh, you abuse the puss?
Oh, yeah.
What is happening right
yeah,
now?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, in exactly the way you're doing now. Like,
but
I just,
what?
I love double entendre. What can I say? I just, dude. Any, it's always good for me. Like, I always like when you can accidentally make it sound dirty. I'm gonna like it. I'm gonna like that.
Mm-hmm.
I swear TJ leaves for one stream
Just one.
Oh, God,
stand-up.
You're right. This is, he would love this.
Yeah.
I don't know if he would love it.
Teej is the anchor.
I don't know if he would love it, but he'd probably shut it down real quick. He'd probably, we would have been on a different topic already. Like,
family friendly podcast, guys.
Oh,
I'm from New Jersey. I can't help myself. I'm sorry. Okay, yeah. Listen.
All right.
Changing my
well,
screen
anyway,
name,
what
place.
Were you going to say about some stupid cloud?
Honestly, I have no idea at this point. But I just want to say that.
Okay, all right.
Just, I guess, okay, so low-level learning.
Mm.
We had a thing where you weren't allowed to plug in devices on the Netflix network.
Yeah.
Why are you giving up? Why not just not have, like, do you really need sunset lamp, or can you just turn on
okay.
a lamp?
So my thing is, like, how do I say this? I, for a long time, lived a very paranoid life where I wouldn't do certain things and I wouldn't use modern comforts out of fear of being targeted.
Hit me
but then
a modern
I learned
that you wouldn't use, like something to help us understand that.
No, literally, like a smart thermostat, I refused. Like, me 10 years ago would not have driven a Tesla because, like, oh, it's, you know, lithium ion batteries attached to a computer on the internet and they could blow it up, right? Like, that crap used to be what I would say. But then I realized if you're being targeted, they're gonna get you, dude. It doesn't matter.
That's
like,
literally
you
my
are...
way of life.
Yeah. What? What?
That's this is that, one password. One password, bro.
Yeah.
I have faith in humanity until it turns on me. So, like,
right.
if I go to, like, a public space, I'll just literally leave my wallet just standing, sitting right
That's
there.
That's crazy.
With my keys.
Hold on. Stop. Wait. Okay. So,
I'll
like,
literally just put my wallet, like, right there and open. Like, I'm just like, no one's gonna steal it. Like, I have faith in you, man. So far, it hasn't yet. Oh, my goodness. Just jinxed myself. But, like, I leave my stuff. Like, this is, like, at, like, gyms that I go to, like, where I kind of know everybody. But, like, I have faith in humanity to where, like, if they're gonna get me, they're gonna get me. If they wanna get my wallet, they'll just break into my locker.
Oh, no, time give on, up. Time on.
I'm speechless.
Like, there's a difference.
What?
I just leave my wallet out because if they're going to get me, first off, there is a shadowy cabal that's going to get somebody for a very specific reason. Leaving your wallet out for anybody to steal is not smart.
Like, okay. Here's a better example. Sometimes I don't lock the door to my house. Like if they're going to get me, they're going to just break the window, kick the door down. Like my
wife's
but you
live in California though. That's different.
Yeah,
that's what you guys do out there.
I mean,
you
I did
doors
on the
open,
East Coast too, you know? Just
you leave your
my
keys
door
in
open.
The car.
All I'm
you know?
Saying is if they're going to get me, they're going to get me. I'm just going to live my life.
No, but that's where I'm at, right? It's like, back to your question, Prime, like, a corporate network has more to lose, right? So, like, maybe there should be rules in place to not plug in random crap. But, like, at my house, like, I'm going to do my best. I'm not going to go on freaking Temu and buy a router from Temu for $14 and then, like, be surprised when I get hacked. I'm not going to do that. But I'm also, like, I'm going to use the internet lamp. You know what I mean? Like, I'm just kind of just whatever. I'm over the paranoia, just for myself personally.
Well,
so, have good... Have good hygiene, like use, like shower, no, but like use a password manager, right, do all that stuff, like VPNs when appropriate, but I mean, like, I'm not gonna, like, not use certain technologies out of fear anymore, just how I've,
yeah,
what I've decided to do.
What about a pain of an ass? Like, to have to sign in via Bluetooth, send a password so it can sign into your network just to turn on a lamp, like... That's not even about getting hacked. That's just an ass pain. I don't want to use
that more,
product, like, ever.
Yeah,
I don't care how great the sunrise and bird calls are and how, oh, did you hear that? That's actually a southwest loon that's specific to our region. Like, I don't even care. Like, there's no money you can pay me to sign into a lamp to make it turn on.
At the far end of the spectrum, I agree. But, like, you know,
that's
thermostat,
the counterpoint,
that goes to my phone,
though.
That is
the legitimate counterpoint because it's like what you're saying makes total sense. Like, if your threat model for why your stuff in your house isn't going to work is that, like, you know, some government security agency is going to target you. It's like, forget it, because they'll just come to your house with guns and take you.
Right.
They don't need to hack your lamp. It's not necessary, right? But the they in your sentence could just as easily just be incompetent people at the actual manufacturer who cannot get the freaking lamp working. And that's why I don't buy any of these things. Like, I know that if I bought a Nest thermostat, I guarantee you the temperature in my house would be random all the time.
Sure.
And that is because I also seem to have uniquely bad luck with this sort of thing. So, you know, all the people who are like, what are you talking about? My Linux install worked the first time, right? It's like, for me, it's always like, I always will hit the weird case for some reason. So if, you know, if I bought a Tesla, it would, the software would never be working. It would be, and in fact, a friend of mine actually had this. He had a Tesla pretty early, and he had so many hilarious stories. He's like, yeah, the air conditioning just stopped working for several weeks because of some software update, but then it started working again now. And he's like, oh, the sunroof stopped working because they updated the software and they changed, I guess new models have that plugged into a different heart physical port, mm-hmm. and they stopped sending the things out the old port, so now his sunroof is just closed permanently. Like, all of a sudden, I'm like, yes, that is what would have happened to me if I had bought a Tesla. I don't want any of that. I just want to know that, like, the sunroof is on a motor, and unless the motor dies, it will open, right?
Yeah.
It's less failure points.
I will say, like, I don't like being on the cutting edge of new technology. So, like, I own a Tesla, for example, right? And to that point, I recently went to go drive somewhere. I sat in my car, and then on the Tesla, it said, there has been an electrical failure. Call Tesla. And I'm like, what the hell is that? And so what I had to do is have them tow the Tesla 45 minutes away and fork out $5,000. And because it's Tesla, it's proprietary, so they can't tell me what happened. They're just like, yep, sorry, we fixed it. Here you go. Give me your money. And so I feel you in terms of the ease of use on technology. Things that are well-solved problems, I will use newer technology, but, like, electric cars, I have a Tesla, I'm probably gonna get rid of it for that reason. I don't like effectively being the market test monkey, right, for these bigger companies.
And they're not serious about fault tolerance. Like, that's the thing. It's like, this car was not, I mean, maybe the brakes were, which is good, but, like, the actual ability to drive the car was not, as far as I can tell, right? And use the features of the car.
Okay. Yeah, I would imagine, like, internally there's, like, some real-time hard system for braking and stuff, but, like, the UX of turning on the car...
Not so much.
Maybe not, yeah.
Sorry, you go, Trash.
Just, no, I was going to say...
You just go, okay?
Prime is so mad. What is happening right now?
I don't know. He's melting down. He's not mad. He's melting. He's, like, so disappointed in us. Like,
I just want to get this off my chest.
He's so disappointed at us right now.
All I want... I don't really care about smart houses or anything. All I want is the fridge that has the clear door so I can just look inside of it without opening the door. That's all I want.
Glass door? Is that what you're
You know, the fridge is where you can see before you open the door. That's all I want.
They have that. You can buy that, can't you?
I know.
Dude, but it's just glass. Why don't you just get triple pane glass or something? Like, why do we have to have technology that involves a camera when we already have something you could see through called glass?
Well, no, that's what I'm saying. I just want a simple glass door.
He wants the glass one. He's agreeing with you, Prime.
I don't want the technology.
This isn't even about technology anymore.
Prime's
getting
mad at me. I'm on
glass.
His side. I'm on your side, Prime.
Dude, thank you. Because you know, when I hear everyone like, oh, the Nest thermostat is good, I'm like... Bitch, it is I set my AC to 69 and I never set it again.
That's the same
for
here.
Next month.
Same here.
What the hell do you need a smart
Can I tell you?
Setter? Okay,
can I tell you?
Okay, hit us up with it.
This is the most American thing you're ever going to hear, but here. I'm laying in bed. It's 9:30.
Uh-huh. Super
my
American.
Son, 2 years old, is asleep. I can see on the baby monitor that his room is a piping hot 74.
Okay.
Oof. I don't want to get up. I'm in bed. I brush my teeth. My Invisalign's in. You know what I do? I go to my phone. I can change the temperature in the house from my bed. I don't have to get up, baby.
You can try to change the temperature.
And everything.
I have two fans going. I'm set.
What? I turned off the camera and only listened to audio.
Oh.
And for most of our kids' childhood, I didn't even have one of those. I slept near enough that I could hear them cry if they got really ornery, and that's it. Because you don't need to listen to everything.
Probably
Why
good practice
are you
filling
your life with this shit? Just stop it. You don't need those units. 74, yes, sucks, but that's totally normal temperature.
But the moral of the story is I changed that shit for my phone, dude. It was great. I don't have to get up. So that's why I
use the moral of the story.
Prime's just more heated now.
Yeah.
Wait, so I saw in chat.
And then
Prime,
Google Cloud
mad?
Went down and my baby froze to death. But
yes,
you know
exactly.
That one day that I could change the temperature from bed, it was all worth it, right? Like
Google login stopped working, so I couldn't show my house as 89 today in the summer.
Right. Prime, are you mad because you bought a Tesla?
Me? No, I never bought a Tesla.
Beacon said you bought a Tesla, that's why.
I have a 2006 what's called Chevy flatbed pickup. That has manual window rolls.
Dude, when I met up with Prime and Tej in LA, they saw my car and Prime was so disappointed. And he was like, you need to get your priorities straight in life.
What was the car?
I have a Porsche. And he just looked at the ground and was like, damn it, Trash, get your life on track. It was so funny.
Ouch,
I felt so bad. I was like, all right, I guess I'll just drive home now. And I just like drove home in shame.
Let the man have
like,
his Porsche.
Right, my bad, dude.
That is a crazy message. Holy shit. We lost the baby because it had an upstream dep on GCP.
Yeah, dude. But that's like actually, okay. That is like the world we live in now. Like, we are living a world where computers have crashed planes into the ground and everyone died. That's not like fictional.
That's true. That's
right?
Terrifying.
So,
that
like,
just, like, sorry.
Like, it really is. Like, people underestimate the risks from actually increasingly putting technology in places where they could have bad results. I agree the baby froze to death is probably an exaggeration in this case, but like, things like that are not far, right? And it 100%. Doesn't have to be about security exploits. It can just be incompetence. That's
no,
the scary
right. I mean,
part.
You guys have heard of the Toyota 2009 case, right?
Yes,
was,
I'm deeply
was this
familiar
the Prius acceleration.
I was like, that was like what, 16 years ago? I don't know.
So I don't know if it was just Prius, Casey. I think it was a lot of Camrys too. But basically, the way the ECU worked on Toyota is it had an RTOS in it, and inside of RTOS is you have like the thread control block for all the threads that run on the RTOS.
Mm-hmm. Real time operating system.
Sorry,
real time
operating system. But basically, the way that it was designed, if like a single bit got flipped in the TCB, the task that ran the brakes would not that ran the accelerator would not properly halt. So like the cars were literally just randomly flooring it, and there was no way to stop it because the way that they wrote the braking logic, because it was a fly-by-wire braking, it wouldn't actually actuate the brakes. So people from like 09 to 2012, I think, were like just randomly getting caught doing like 120 miles an hour and flying into a brick wall because the ECU was like crashing gracefully.
You know, I didn't know that they ever root caused that. I didn't know they ever published what it actually was.
So it was closed privately. But Michael Barr, who was the consultant that was doing the analysis, has published some of his slides of his findings. I think a lot of it is still under NDA with Toyota, but he basically like published what he thought it was before it went public, internal, right? Okay. And he said basically, yeah, like, this thing is a landmine. If a bit flips here, 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 or here, the ECU will just run on forever in undefined behavior. And that includes, like, oops, the brakes don't work.
Wow. Yeah. Just recently, like, just this year, maybe last year, Tesla had it where there was some sort of fire that happened, and people couldn't unlock the door because there was a power failure in the Tesla, and it just, like, the door shut, and the people burned to death inside their own car.
Fail open is very important. In fact, we can tie this back here at the end, because we are at our hour mark, I think, or getting close to it. We can tie this back to the original topic of the day. One of the things that Google included in their, like, mea culpa, we took down the entire internet, sorry about that, our bad, was at the end they were like, what are the steps we're going to take to try and improve our process, you know? And one of the things they listed was this service should have failed open. Like, instead of the default for when the quota system goes down being deny everything, maybe it's just approve everything so that the services can keep running. I don't know how that necessarily, but maybe you could do something more cabined where it's like approve anything that doesn't allocate too much new space. I don't know what they meant by that exactly, but they were like, try to make these things fail open so that it won't just take down the internet if like the quota check fails. That was what I assumed that they meant, but I don't really know because, again, it was very terse. Statement, yeah. And I only read it for this podcast, right? I don't study this stuff, so I'm not sure. But so fail open is a pretty important principle. Like, what should something fail closed or should something fail open? And if you have like door locks on a car, ideally, if there could be people inside, you always want it to fail open so that there's no way for like a car computer system to fail and then trap the people on the inside. You want to fail if the system for locking goes down, you want it to be open, right? Because worst case, people steal your car or something like that. That's a lot better than burning alive.
I was thinking about that. Oh, sorry, you can go.
Okay, so it is tough from like a design perspective.
It is.
Because the control plane software that crashed was the authorization software, it's like, I agree with you, it should fail open, but like to your point, what does fail open mean in an authorization case, right? You can't just be like, yeah, go do it, whatever, because that's bad. Yeah. But inversely, it's denying everything killed the internet for a minute. Yeah. So what do you do? It's tough. Prime, go ahead.
I was about to say, this fail open thing, that also, like, there's you also have a problem with this even with just the physical reality. Remember how Tesla was claiming that their whether or not it actually is bulletproof, their windows were bulletproof? What happens when you drive a Cybertruck into a pond and you need the brake out of the window?
I actually have a keychain.
Right.
We'll break
yeah,
window.
Yeah. I have a key utility that breaks windows, but normal windows, they just you hit it once and they explode into a thousand little pieces. Mm-hmm. Yeah. What do you do when you hit it? It just goes. And you're like, oh.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, this is like the locks, right? It's like one of the reasons that you want a lock to always be possible to do physically, if you could, right? Is for this reason. It's because if you think about what fail open means, well, if a mechanical element has to push the lock up and down and it's not accessible to humans, it's almost impossible to build a fail open version of that, because if the electrical system fails, the locks cannot actuate. So there's really no fail open possibility.
Right.
So, like, again, like, just smart mechanical design is like your car should have a way that you, with your hand, can unlock the door from the inside if you needed to, right? And, like, anything short of that is just kind of bad safety design, right? And the same is true for internet services to the extent that you can do them. You want to be thinking about that the same way. It doesn't quite analogize exactly, but it's similar, right?
That is interesting, because, like, the Tesla, you know, you have the way that the doors work is you have a button that you push that electrically pulls the window down and opens the door for you. But there is a physical, I'm pretty sure it's pure mechanical knob where you can rip that and it pops the door open. It's bad for the windows, obviously, but that's the fail open scenario, is like, you know, you are in a lake, the electronics are dead, pull this lever, the door will open. So I'm interested in that case, if they knew that, if it was a rental, maybe that version didn't have that model, maybe it's not mechanical and
it's like
broke.
How did they burn to death without being able to do that?
Yeah.
I don't know, that's just the things that I heard. I don't know how it exactly works. I didn't do any research.
Window-wise, it's worse because, like, to your point, like, you can't open the door if you fall into a lake because the water pressure is too high, so you need to be able to open the window, and in that case, I don't know what their answer is to that. Break it, I guess, or I don't know.
That's a terrifying scenario.
It is terrifying.
No.
Prime, I know you love Rust.
Yeah.
Do you think that the GCP outage would have happened had this binary been written in Rust?
You know, that's actually a really good question. I think that we would have still had some sort of weird state, because at the end of the day, how do you have a state, let's just say the YAML file produces something incorrectly, what happens to a GCP service if they update the policy and there's nothing there in a thing that's supposed to be there? Mm-hmm. Right, like, someone would have probably programmed the positive case, and then what happens at the negative case? It just wouldn't deploy, like, all things would stop anyways.
Right.
I'm not really sure, like, how this could have saved it much other than you would have had a pre-planned, hey, it's going to explode, maybe you could have identified it earlier, and maybe the outage would have been less. I mean, I'm all for the idea of unique pointer /smart pointers, where you can't access things without some sort of, like, hey, yeah, this thing's not nil. Like, I'm monads. Yeah, dude, get me in. Let me have a piece of that monad. Like, that, I'm all about that. But at the same time, I don't know. Because the real question, I guess the question I'd have to follow up with is that it's not whether or not Rust would have made this possible or not possible. It is, if it were written in Rust, would this software ever have existed beyond somebody's idea or not? And that's really the question I have to ask is, can it actually exist in production? I'm not too sure.
Right.
We don't have any security exploits in Rust because the software did not get written.
Right, because it never got shipped. It's never in production. Yeah, that's the thing, right? Like, so whenever I do videos, I say at the end of the video about, like, memory exploits, like, would Rust have saved this? I think the answer to this one is sort of, right? Like, because it wasn't, like, necessarily, like, a memory corruption vulnerability or a memory corruption issue, it was more just, like, you dereferenced a bad address. I think the Rust programming model would have helped with it, but, like, you can do an unwrap on an option that's none, right? And then, like, you crash. So it's like there are still human factors in the code that could have caused it to be the same DOS condition if, you know, the haha object in the YAML file wasn't there, right?
They would have had an expect, right? Like, because they, well, like, yeah. They'd been like, you cannot have a license or whatever it was without these fields, and they probably would have just expected.
Sure.
Which would have caused it's like no different than a nil pointer crash, because you wouldn't have known about it until runtime. So I assume it's the same thing. I don't think Rust would have helped at all here.
Yeah,
it would have been nice if they had said what language it was written in, showed us a little bit of the code, like told us if this was Gemini. Right, this could have been like somebody vibe coded this and like, hey man, I'm pretty sure the AI said it was great, you know, like, but there was no information, so we don't really know, like, human factors wise, we have no idea what happened here really, because they were very very. Like,
it was actually written in Rust, is my guess, and they actually don't want to release that information that it was written in Rust
by Gemini. So it was written in Rust by Gemini. Yeah,
as that's part crazy. Of the greater agenda of the Rust industrial complex, you sheeple need to wake up.
Put up the board. Where's the board with all the connections between the Rust Foundation and the, like, where's your diagram? We need the little conspiracy diagram.
All right. Oh, this is a great
episode.
Are
we done? Have we wrapped?
I think we're wrapped, right?
We got tons of great content in here. Dude, no one could be unhappy with that. No one could be unhappy with that episode. Chad, that was a golden episode. What more do you want from us? Low level, everybody.
Mood up today. Vibe coding errors on my screen. Terminal coffee and hair.